Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up with shut up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. It is another Titans loss. Obviously, this team has struggled to win back-to-back games. The streak of not being able to do so continues. It's over 24 calendar months. Ridiculous. But we're going to get into that game, the loss against the Commanders. We'll look at some of the things coming up against the Jaguars with ESPN NFL Nation Jaguars reporter Michael DiRocco. We got Chris Sanders coming on for Run TMC. There's a lot to jump into, and I'll say let's start it with this, and I want to look at just the run defense, right? This Commanders team, like right from the rip, 40-yard touchdown run by Brian Robinson Jr., and the route was more or less on, and it was a bad look, like just from the gate. And one of the things that I saw continuously happen was the Commanders were able to run between the tackles. Now, that read option, you know, the threat to Jaden Daniels, that he brings is definitely something that you have to take note of. As a linebacker, you have to be careful and aware of him pulling and going, and it messes things up front for the D tackles, the end you got to play. It was just a mess for them. And then you look at Jerome Baker Jr. This wasn't a good game for Jerome Baker. And he was consistently getting swallowed up by blocks. He was having trouble being out of position and things like that. And it was a bad look. And then you look also at that 40-yard run, and it was a bad angle by Darryl Worley at the top of it. And you can't have that. And Robinson was able to outrace everybody to the end zone. And it was one of those games where you just saw it just continue to pile on and pile on. Chris Rodriguez, he had 100 yards rushing, or darn near it. I have to look at the numbers exactly, but you know, these guys, they were getting busy. 264 yards rushing. That was the most since week 12 of the 2018 season, when the Texans rushed for 281. And if you remember that, a good portion of that was a long run by, oh, what's my man that came out of Miami? I forget the running back's name, but he had a 90 something yard run, and it was after the Texans has stopped. I believe it was Luke Stocker. They stopped him on a attempt to punch it in the end zone. But nevertheless, it was a bad look for the Titans team. And I mean, the special teams was a little bit better, right? In that the coverage unit was better, but you had the ball get put on the ground by Jaquan Jackson, and that was something that contributed early to things getting out of control. I mean, before you know it, you blink your eyes, it's 21-0, right? And next thing you know, it's 28-0, you know, 2 minutes into the first quarter, and it was just one of those games where you're down, or 2 minutes into the second quarter. It was one of those games where you're down like that. Like, there's not really much you could do. A few bright spots, Will Levis, I thought he played well, and you look at what, you know, some of the throws that he made. Obviously, the sacks, you know, they were still there. But there was one throw in particular that stood out to me, and that was when he had pressure coming from all angles. But he was able to get away from it, and he stepped forward, and he threw a strike, man. It was a throw that was on the button to Calvin Ridley to catch right along the sideline, and that was a big play. NWI, Nick Westbrook Ikhine, continues to shine. You know, he's now at 8 touchdowns, and, I mean, over the last 8 games, no one has more touchdowns than him. He's tied with Ja'Marr Chase for the most touchdowns over the last 8 games, and he's third in the league, tied with George Kittle. And it's just, what more can you say about him? And I think he's the epitome of just, like, continuing to put that work in and continuing to chip away, and eventually, you know, good things will happen. Now, I will say this about Levis. You want to see the completion percentage up a little bit. You know, he was 18 out of 37. So we're looking at, you know, less than 50%, which isn't good. But I tell you what, there was another good play, right, where he was running and the pressure was on him, and he spiked it. Like, he threw it down. He had to dirt it, you know. And to do that as opposed to being able to throw the interception, or, you know, make the bad play. I think that was a true mark of a guy that is showing some improvement. In fact, that's what I asked Will Levis earlier on Wednesday about just how has he improved with Brian Callahan and how that relationship of getting the plays up and down and the ones that, you know, stand out, getting those in the game for the week. Here's Will Levis on Brian Callahan.
No, I mean, luckily he's smart enough to where that most of the decisions are made by him, and going through the whys and why nots of certain concepts or plays that we have up in a week has made me a much better player and just much better reader of defenses and understanding of play calls. And I feel like at this point too, the last few weeks I've been able to step up and suggest a couple things which might get shot down and might not, but I'm at least comfortable to bring them to the table because we can have an open discussion about it. So that's been cool. I feel like at this point I just have a really good feel of what we're trying to get done as an offense and kind of what's been rolling for us and what we've kind of found is our certain bread and butter and niches. So because of that, I feel more comfortable coming to Brian with things, and I feel like, you know, we're definitely more candid in those conversations.
What would you feel has been your biggest area of growth, you know, over this season working with him?
I think just continuing to see things and make the correct decisions. Compared to last year, I've spoke on it. Like, I just think my aptitude and ability to understand the coverage and understand why or why not a play might work for it, and how to get ourselves the best answer. So still not 100% with it. A couple times last week where I just, you know, a couple of coverages that they got me with some disguise stuff, but you're not always going to be right. And when you are in those wrong situations, it's what you're going to do with the ball to not, you know, make it worse situations, which I feel like I've done a decent job of. So that's the one I'd say I've gotten better.
So you heard what he said. You know, the relationship is building. He pointed out some of the things that he's, you know, areas where he's growing, and that's essential. And obviously there's not much time left. You know, we're talking, what, five more games before a big decision is going to have to be made on the quarterback position. But in the meantime, he has to figure out a way to continue to just try to lock this down. And give himself another week for sure, but another season to, you know, show that he could be the guy. Right now, it looks like that's the direction, but, you know, that's a different conversation we'll have in a few weeks from now. Obviously, once the season is over, and, you know, it's just kind of like dead man walking right now. These guys have nothing to play for but their pride. I know there's a 0.2% chance of the playoffs, but it's just simply not likely. But like I said, there's still pride to play for. Tony Pollard, you know, he had the fumble, and that's something I know after the game he's really upset about that. But, I mean, look, man, Mike Sanstrill, he made a really good play. As Coach Mack would say, he was raking the lawnmower, like trying to start the lawnmower, and he raked it out, and he was able to recover it. And that was yet another turnover early. And it's just this team, they're not built to be able to overcome turnovers. They're not built to, like, everything has to go perfectly for them to win. And it's just the way it is for them right now. Now, in the future, obviously that could change as they continue to build this roster and get more players. But right now, this team, you know, at 3-9, they're desperate for a win. And they should be desperate for a win. And you look at Jeffrey Simmons, his comments about them being hungover. Look, this is not a team to be hungover. As I said in the intro, 24 calendar months since this team has won back-to-back games. There's no reason to be hungover after a loss. And I know it was a big win, and I know that obviously Amy Adams Strunk was down there and she was emotional and everything, but you got to tuck that away. Flush it, just like you flush a loss, and they've gotten good at doing that. You got to get good at flushing wins and leave it in the past and move forward. And that's not something that they did against the Commanders, and you could tell. And you got the comments from Jarvis Brownlee Jr., you know, where he had mentioned being in that situation where he said some guys aren't going to say it, but the cold affected them. Good brother. Like, it's the same weather here. I mean, this week is going to be in the low 40s, right, 30s. Right now the forecast for the game is calling for some rain too, so. If that weather was bad, this weather that you're facing this upcoming weekend is going to be no good. And then also, you got to make sure that that's something that doesn't affect you, because let's say this team next year is a team that's you know, in the playoffs. Chances are you're going to have to go to Buffalo. Chances are you have to go to Kansas City. Let me tell you something, it gets cold there. In fact, Kansas City, I remember it was so cold that AFC Championship game, people's iPhones stopped working. So it's just to let you know how much worse it can get. But either way, Brownlee, he's a young player. I like the way he plays. He's going to find his way. And that's pretty much that. Chidobe Awuzie looks like he's going to be back. He was a part of practice this week. So they kind of projected him as a guy they were looking to bring back this week. No promises, but we'll see what happens there. That is something to watch. Although Daryl Baker Jr. has done a solid job, but obviously Awuzie is a better player, and that will help them all the more, because let me tell you something. Brian Thomas from LSU, he's a baller down there in Jacksonville. So they'll need someone to be able to contend with him. And the Titans haven't really been a team that moves the corner around outside of outside of Legarius Sneed when he was healthy. So they need both sides, have to be strong, because they're going to be looking to get the ball down the field to Thomas, who's a big-time player. I think this is a game the Titans can win. Now, I'm not going to say it's a game they will win, because we know this team has not earned that right to be someone that you say will win games. But we'll see what happens, and we'll continue to work through this streak, right, and see if there's an opportunity for this team to stack a couple wins. We'll be here regardless, so make sure you continue to rock with us. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
And the music fades as the lights dim. Where are we going? And now, for your Houston Rockets, starting at shooting guard, out of Florida, number 11, Vernon Med Maxwell.
And now, the best tennis player of all time, Arthur Ashe.
Man, you're breaking the rules. You're not supposed to call each other nobody that is deceased.
I know that's breaking the rules.
But
man,
you know what? I'll take the greatness of Arthur Ashe. I appreciate it. Hey, listen, back in third grade, I had the same afro as him, too.
What happened? What happened?
I didn't want to keep walking around looking like a microphone. Oh, man. Like, but, yeah, listen, you got to laugh like this, right? After,
you got to, man. You got to laugh,
you know,
man.
Seeing the way the Titans fans and everybody are reacting to the loss. I mean, obviously, it was a bad one. Great thing is there's another week for you guys. And so you go into this week, and you got the 2-10 Jaguars coming in, and this is a team that's reeling, probably one of the few teams that's reeling more than the Titans are. But let's get into last week and just the way – the Commanders were able to run the football. 264 yards.
You know what the crazy
from your
thing
perspective,
about?
Yeah, what happened?
You know, it's funny because I was listening to Simmons' quote after the game. He said this. He said, "We got to learn how to handle success." So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that you don't care. It doesn't mean that you're giving up on plays. I just think that they didn't come out with no energy. I mean, you got to look at the situation with the Commanders. They're coming off a 3-game losing streak. I mean, they really did. So, you know, I was expecting something different. I was expecting the Titans to come out and just start blasting people. But then you look up, it's 28-0. You're like, wait a minute. This don't look like the same team that was going against the Texans. So that was just kind of disappointing.
Yeah, like, how can you tell? Like, I'm sure you've been a part of these types of instances, but is there something during the week that you've seen in the past that make it like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We're going to give it our best, but Sunday may not be, you know, that good.
No, but I just think that, you know, in the back of their mind, they was expecting to win. But I just think that, you know, just watching the first couple of series, you know, the Commanders came out with more energy, more, you know, intentional with what they're doing. And that makes a difference. I know, you know, as a leader of the Tennessee Titans, which is Jeffrey Simmons, I would expect him to give one of those speeches before the game, which he probably did, I might not have said, and say, listen, I know we beat the Texans, but let's go out here and play like we did last time. Because if you, you know, T, if you look at the first two series, that did not look like the same team as the Texans. I mean, when they played against the Texans.
Not at all. It was bad. Nick Westbrook Ikhine, though, that's been a bright spot.
Oh,
you know, we're looking at the amount of touchdowns he has. You know, we're looking at 8 touchdowns. You know, he's third in the league, tied with George Kittle. What do you make of him?
Man, you gave him that nickname, Honda Accord. Why? Because he's built different and he's always reliable. And, you know, whenever the Tennessee Titans need a play, he's always making a play. He's always making a touchdown. And then when he played against the Commanders, he made 2 touchdowns. Those are the kind of cats that you need on a team that's reliable, that don't complain. Listen, you know, did you know this? That he didn't really get in the game, you know, the first quarter. I don't think he really got in the game. He really didn't even get – no. Yeah, he did get in the game. He just didn't get any attempts. He didn't get any attempts.
Right.
So, you know, when you have a situation like that where you don't get any attempts, then all of a sudden you catch 2 touchdowns, and every time you touch the ball, it's touchdowns. It just shows you he's always reliable.
Yeah, he is definitely always reliable. Let's go through a play. And I thought it was interesting because a lot of these, you know, internet and social media wide receiver coaches, you know, they're like, Calvin Ridley, he messed up. He I don't know, like they were very critical of him, right?
Okay.
It was the throw where Levis kind of scrambled to his left. He threw it across, and it looked like Ridley, you know, they a lot of people accused him of stopping running, like, you know, just like giving up on the play. But apparently what came out is Ridley, and we'll talk to Ridley about it, but it looked like from Callahan's perspective, he thought they were initiating a scramble drill. So he was going to break his route back and run the direction that Levis was scrambling.
Right.
Take us through that process.
You know, first of all, he was running a crossing route. And when you run a crossing route, you know, we call them spots. You got to get to your spot. We have a route, you know, what I coach with the NBA, we call it an over route. You over route, you got to get to 8 to 22. And I think that what really was doing it, and I may be wrong because I wasn't in his shoes, I don't think he saw Levis. And so it kind of like, okay, I think the quarterback's in trouble, so I got to adjust. Because, listen, let me break this down to people. Calvin Ridley has never had a stigma of being a lazy receiver. So for somebody to even say, oh, he stopped on the route, he ain't this, he ain't that, he was being low, get out of here with that nonsense. I just think that, in my opinion, as a receiver, I don't think he saw Levis. So he started to be like, okay, you know what, I got to figure out something else to do. And then that's when the ball went over his head.
Yeah, that's it. It was a misconnect. But then you had the play where Levis, you know, had the pressure coming from the right, coming from his left, and then it was collapsing into his lap, and he was able to spin out of it and run and hit Ridley on a spot throw right along the sideline. Beautiful play.
Yeah.
Are those the things that make you watch Levis and say, hey, you know what, maybe there is something to him?
You know, that's a good observation. There is something to him. I mean, if you look at some of the throws he throws, I mean, there's some good, strong, physical throws. He's tough. It's just the decision-making at times. I mean, it's like we can go back to the Bears game, you know, the situation where he had a pick 6, and then we go back to the Packers game where he sees the corner sitting in 5, and the cornerback's taking away the quick game, and he still throws it to, you know, the wide receiver. So it's those little things. It's not that he doesn't have the arm strength. It's not that he's not tough. It's just that you got to improve the decision-making. It's kind of like, you know, if you look at the John Elways, you know, the Tom Brady's, they're making the decision before the ball's even hiked because of the coverage. So I think if he can get to that type of level to where he's throwing the pass before he's even hiking the ball, and if he can get to where, you know, he can do that, then he's going to be a good quarterback in this league.
Yeah. Do you think he should be back next year as the starter, or what do you think?
I don't know. That's a hard question. I mean, this is just my opinion. I think that you should bring somebody in to where it's a competition, to where, you know, the best man wins. I don't know if it's a veteran. I don't know if you're going to draft, to where they're competing for the starting position. So if you do that, then he beats the rookie, or he beats the, you know, the veteran that they bring in, then you know that he deserves to be playing. You know, last year, if you look at last year, you know, when they brought in Rudolph, it was signified. It was from day one that Levis is our quarterback. But if you go into this season, you bring a veteran in, or you get somebody in the draft to say, you know what, there's going to be competition in camp. That's how you let him win the job.
What do you think of this defense? Obviously, you know, they gave up a lot on the ground, but, you know, Jarvis Brownlee, he continues to get the calls. Yeah. Is he someone, like, do you feel like he has to stop being as handsy, or are you from the school that I'm from where it's like, hey, listen, you got to let him play his game?
You know what? He's got to understand the game. And when I say this, I'm not saying that he doesn't know how to play the game. He's got to understand the game today. Back in the day when I went against Dale Carter, you know, Deion Sanders, Aeneas Williams, they'll choke at the line of scrimmage because that was allowed in the game. That's what was allowed. Now you got to understand that when you're in you know, in this era of football, you can't put your hands on the game. So as a defensive back coach, I got to figure out a way to make sure my hips are better, my eyes are better, keeping the receiver in front of me. I got to figure out a way, you know, to stay on top of the wide receiver. So if he can do that better and eliminate a lot of those things with his hands, I think he can be an okay, you know, defensive back in this league.
Yeah, I do too. The safety position, Darrell Worley came in and he had a couple errors and it ended up costing them touchdowns. What do you make of this? Is this something like at this point you just gotta kind of roll with what you have, or what do you do there?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this earlier in the season. You know, it was the problem with the Tennessee Titans right now is just the depth. I mean, and I'm gonna go back to 1999 when we went to the Super Bowl. We had so many corners, we had so many safeties that if somebody got hurt, somebody else can come in. So now you're in a situation this year in 2024. To where the depth of the Tennessee Titans is not really good. I mean, you got guys like, you know, Snead that was out, Awuzie was out, and, you know, some different safety was out. And then you bring in guys in here that are not proven or not, you know, ready for this league, and then they're actually thrown into the fire. So, you know, it's kind of hard to where you're thrown into a situation to where you really haven't played that much and you really haven't played with the guys around you and you're expected to make plays. But the reason why he's not making plays is because you haven't played with these guys. But if you play with these guys like they did in 1999, where these guys played together like 4 or 5 years, then you can make plays. Because why? Because everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, sometimes it takes that, right? Just finding a way to get everybody on the same page.
Absolutely.
With Brian Callahan and you know, you got the guys come out that say they you know, Simmons said hungover. You got Jarvis Brownlee Jr., you know, he said maybe the cold affected guys. Callahan, you know, really reacted to that. You know, he called it an excuse. He said that the hungover perspective has been addressed. What do you think? Does that say anything about Callahan? Like, does that give you an indictment on him?
I think that, and I'm being, you know, real careful when I say this, that relies on your leaders. That relies on, you know, Arden Key, which is a stand-up guy who's going to really say a lot of things. That relies on Jeffrey Simmons to really get these guys going. I mean, there's no way where at the beginning of the week that you said that we're going to try to run the table, but then all of a sudden, you know, the first 10, 15 minutes, you're down 28-0. I mean, there was no energy. There was no passion. There was just nothing there. And we can call it a hangover or this and that. You can't have a hangover if your mindset was we trying to win all the way out, because they got to understand every play counts. Every catch counts. Every penalty counts. Every decision that you make counts, because you have no error to lose a game. So why in the world, when you just come off a win with the Texans and you come out flat, you come out with no energy, you come out making mistakes, you come out doing penalties, that's just your leader saying, okay, we got to get better in these aspects of the game.
Yeah, man, and especially that being the case when you haven't won two games in a row in calendar years. Like, it's been over 24 actual months since this team has put together a win streak.
Yeah, yeah.
That is crazy.
That is really crazy. I mean, when's the last time that ever happened to where, you know, you can't win back-to-back games? And then here's the thing. It's not that you're not winning back-to-back games, but these games could maybe attribute to you going on a roll. You win two in a row. You don't think you're going to build some confidence? Then now you lose a game and you get embarrassed. Now you're back to square one. You're thinking, okay, yeah. Can we run the table? That's the difference. Just imagine we win two in a row. Okay, we good. We just won two in a row. Now we go beat Jackson. Oh, my gosh, we're right back in this thing. But now you go down to the Commanders and you squander a great opportunity. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's funny you mentioned the Commanders because, you know, when I was there at the game, I left a little bit later, right? And I happened to be walking, and there was a guy walking towards me, and he was big. And actually, I had one of the other media guys with me. And the guy, he was, you know, kind of husky. He was big, you know, and the media guy that was with me, he turned to me after the dude walked by, and he said, I didn't know, like, Chris got big after playing wide receiver. That's like, he's really big for a former wide receiver. I said, hey, no, buddy. That ain't Chris Sanders. That's Dexter Manley.
Guess what? I was at the game also. And this big guy, you know, walked by me and, you know, he had some, his list was kind of ashy, everything. And my wife was like, she's like, oh, no. She's like, I did not know TD played for the Commanders. I said, baby, that's not TD. That's Wilbur Marshall.
This is Jarvis Brownlee Jr., and I'm right here talking with TD.
Back from the break, talking with TD. You hear that music. Everybody, when they hear that beat, they always want to know who that is. That's OC, Time's Up. And I think that song is fitting, especially for our next guest. That's ESPN, NFL Nation, Jaguars reporter, Michael DeRocco. And the time's not up for him, but it may be up for that coaching staff. We're going to get into that. But first off, man, how did we manage to get you off the golf course? That's the million-dollar question.
I may or may not have been on the golf course at some point this week, but that might be on a Tuesday. But since this consider it today, but no, yeah. I mean, obviously, big day here. First day of the new week with, you know, the Jags preparing for the Titans and all the stuff about the Al-Shaair suspension and all that stuff. Couldn't get on the course today.
Yeah, no, I get it. It definitely first things first. What was like after the game, talking to the guys in the locker room, like what was the vibe? Like, were they still upset about that and ready to rumble?
Yeah, and I didn't – they were upset, yes, but it wasn't as – I don't know. I just didn't – it didn't feel as intense as I might have – as I expected it to be. Now, there were a couple of guys we talked to, specifically Trayvon Walker. He was being very careful in what he said, but you could tell he was really, really upset about it and angry. Same thing with Evan Engram. And, you know, they all called it a dirty play and, you know, said there's no place for it and stuff like that. But, you know, I kind of was expecting maybe a little bit more outward anger, but they were still not pleased by any stretch of the imagination that, you know, he got hit that way. And you know, obviously we saw with the suspension being announced, we'll be talking to the players at some point soon to kind of get their reaction on that 3-game suspension. And, you know, I'm expecting, you know, a lot of support for that here in the Jags locker room.
Yeah, naturally. Yeah, they definitely should support that. You mentioned the intensity and how it may not have been where you would have projected it to. Let's stretch that over to the season. This is a team, the roster is pretty talented. I don't understand exactly why they only have 2 wins, but what would you say, is there a disconnect between Doug Peterson and the locker room, or what would you say the issue is?
It's really weird because on a 2-10 team, I'd expect this locker room at this point, especially to be, I don't want to say like lost because that's not the right term, but disengaged. And that's really not the case. I've been in this locker room here back in 2018, 2019, when it was a bad locker room, when things did go wrong and you know, the locker room was sniping at each other and you have both, you know, offense mad at defense mad at offense. And you can kind of tell that, you know, the coach had kind of lost them a little bit. And that's surprisingly really not been the case here. So that really hasn't been the issue. It's really, to me, the most jarring thing is this is a team back in 2022 that fought their way through some adversity. They rallied for wins against the Raiders and the Cowboys and the Ravens, including beating the Ravens like in the last minute of the game. You know, they fought through that adversity. They were able to kind of overcome those slow starts and make plays at the end of games when they needed to. And once they got to 8-3 last year, and then Trevor Lawrence got hurt and Christian Kirk got hurt, and ever since then they've just not been able to handle that. And you go back down to the season opener, and one play doesn't, you know, determine a season, but, you know, they're up 17-7. They're about to go in the end zone 24-7, and Travis Etienne fumbles. You know, the Dolphins recover, and then the next play it's 80 yards to Tyreek Hill. And you could just kind of see on the sideline all of the, you know, the emotion and all of the shoulders kind of collectively slump as, and here we go again, because that's the kind of stuff that happened in the second half of 2023. And that's just been the way it is now. They've had opportunities to make plays and they've not connected. You know, they failed to make, you know, one stop here and there on defense, you know, against, you know, the Texans last week. They, you know, they get a stop on defense on a third and eight, and they've got a third and four, excuse me, and they've got a chance to, you know, maybe kick a game time field goal. And I think they gave up like a 12 yard run. So just not real good there. I've had one player say to me, there's a lot of guys waiting around for something to happen, each expecting somebody else to make the play. And then when you have that, and they've had a lot of coverage busts and the offensive line hasn't played great, and, you know, the run game has been pretty stagnant. You know, we add all that together, you get a team that's just sort of floundering around, and here we are watching a 2-10 team where there's way more talent on this team than to be 2-10. They probably shouldn't be 10-2, but they shouldn't be 2-10.
Yeah, exactly. And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Jaguars reporter Mike DiRocco. D-Rock, this team, right? And it's crazy because I think back to 2016. That was my first year in Philly, Doug Peterson's first year, and I remember all the close games, right? And they lost so many close games. The following year, they managed to win those close games. The next thing you know, they're winning the Super Bowl. I say all that to say, this Jaguars team, 7 of the 10 losses have been by one score or less. I don't know. It just seems strange. You kind of touched on it, but, I mean, is it really a matter of not getting everything out of the talent, or is it a matter of just like you said, you know, guys waiting for other guys to make something happen?
Yeah, I think that's all of that. But I also think it goes to a team's mentality. You know, teams that win those one-score games, they have an element of toughness. You know, not physical toughness, but more so mental toughness, you know, that is at another level. And for whatever reason, when the games get down in the fourth quarter, their confidence just seems to wane. They just seem they just can't make the one or two plays that they need to make to have not to win the game, but even just have a chance to win it. And it's just, you watch them make the same mistakes. A lot of it's self-inflicted. You know, you watch them make the same mistakes week after week after week, and you start to wonder, is this a smart team? Is this a team that, you know, is able to handle adversity without sitting there thinking, oh gosh, here we go again. And I think that attitude has sort of invaded this team a little bit.
Yeah, that's a darn shame. Another thing that's invaded the team, you know, Trevor Lawrence has kind of been in and out of the lineup. We definitely know he won't be in this week, but, you know, you look at some close games, you know, the Texans game, you look at the Vikings game. Like, this team with Mac Jones, they've been able to make some things happen. Is there a huge drop-off, or what can the Titans fans expect from Mac Jones?
Yeah, there's been – I mean, Mac Jones played pretty well in the fourth quarter the other day, but the other two games against Minnesota and Detroit, I mean, they managed just 13 total points combined. And you know, this offense is not going to push it down the field with Mac Jones as much as they did with Trevor Lawrence, which, you know, they had one shot with Mac Jones to Brian Thomas Jr. in the game against the Texans, and surprisingly he overthrew him, which was, you know, the opposite of what happened in the first half when Trevor Lawrence underthrew him. But for the most part, I think they want to get the ball out quick. They're you know, that Titans defensive line is a monster, And, you know, they don't, you know, he does not have the same, you know, elusiveness that Trevor Lawrence does. And certainly the quarterback run element is not there. So, you know, they're going to try and run it as best they can, but they want to get that ball out quick. So not as much down the field for the Jaguars. So maybe a little bit more creative ways to get Brian Thomas Jr. the ball.
Yeah, and speaking of him, I mean, 700 yards, what, six or seven touchdowns. He's definitely been doing wonderful, all things considered. Well, what has been the best thing that he's been able to show so far?
The downfield speed and the deep threat. You know, that's something that he really hadn't had in the offense the last couple of years, and he brings that. And you know, he has had, I think, just 100-yard game. So you look at the numbers and you go, man, it's just been steady. He's not really had, like, the big breakout games. But the thing of it is there's been at least five shots down the field where he was open and they were unable to connect. And not all of them would have been touchdowns, but they were 40, 50, 60-yard gains at least. So just imagine his numbers a little bit better if they had been able to hook up on those shots. So, you know, he's been their best offensive weapon. You know, sometimes they've struggled to get him the ball. Now they're more manufacturing ways to get him the ball. They'll hand it off to him. They'll throw it to him on some of those crossers, you know, instead of just running him deep. And it's been sort of hit and miss as to whether they can be consistent with that. But he has been, without doubt, their best offensive player. And if they can figure some things out, you know, next year and get somebody on the opposite side of him to kind of draw some attention away, then he's got a chance to be a consistent 1,000-yard receiver.
And last thing before we get you out of here, the defense, I mean, you look at this depth chart. I mean, there's so much talent. Eric Armstead was a big addition. Have they gotten anything out of the defense from your perspective, or is there, like everything else, a lot of room for improvement?
Yeah, it's a lot of room for improvement. I mean, they're giving up over 400 yards a game, which is last in the NFL. Armstead has played more outside as opposed to inside, where he's actually much, much better. And, you know, the two ends have been pretty good, Trayvon Walker and Josh Hines-Allen. But other than that, that's been all of their pass rush is those two guys. And, you know, the secondary, the two safeties, Antonio Johnson, Andre Sisco, have really struggled with busts. Like, there will be some big, deep shots that the Titans will be able to take and hit against the Jags this weekend, because those guys just are out of position a ton. Last week, for example, there was a play where, you know, Ronald Darby is trying to chase down, I think it was Nico Collins, who was running pretty much wide open, and the ball was underthrown, so he was able to get there and knock it away. But, you know, that was Andre Sisco's responsibility, and he bought on another route. And, you know, immediately as he popped up, you know, Ronald Darby's looking at Andre Sisco and yelling at him. So there'll be some chances for the Titans to make a couple of big plays there. And if they hook, you know, then this game could get out of control pretty quick.
Well, hey, maybe Nick Westbrook and Kenny could continue his hot streak. You know, in the last 8 weeks, no one in the NFL has more receiving touchdowns, and he and Jamar Chase are tied for 8. So maybe this would be another opportunity for him to pop out. But yeah, man, D-Rock, I appreciate you jumping in and taking some time with us. I know you got to hit the locker room, and you know, later on, more assignments and everything. You know how we do each week. So thanks a lot, man. Definitely hit me up when you get in town.
All right, bud. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no doubt.
So that was Mike DiRocco. Definitely appreciate him coming aboard, man, and talking shop. Always good to be able to get him off the golf course, man. That guy loves golf more than anybody I know. So I appreciate Mike coming in and talking shop with us. Appreciate my guy Chris Sanders making it happen as well. Obviously Parker Kelly over there making this thing work as well. And, man, this is just it's another opportunity to talk shop, man, and another opportunity for me to thank each of you for your support. Definitely make sure you continue to check us out, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review.